I chose the title for this sermon weeks ago, Daring to Disturb the Universe. And I'll speak more about my reasons for selecting that title in a moment, but I'm guessing that for many of us, we might feel like our universe has been pretty disturbed already. Disturbed quite enough from the events of this past week. And from what I'm hearing and reading, many are not quite sure that they can actually integrate any more disturbances into their lives right now. And that's so understandable. This has been a momentous week for us. And yet, we are here on this very important occasion of celebrating Jim's ordination into the Unitarian Universalist ministry. And even amidst this tumultuous and anxiety-ridden time, the cycle of life just keeps spinning. And we keep doing what humans have done for eons. We gather to commemorate and celebrate events just like this one. Events that look forward to the future. All around us, babies are still being born and weddings are being planned and people are being ritually blessed and launched into their new vocations. And so it goes, and so it goes. And it seems very important for us to remember this truth, that our actions tonight are a statement of faith, and in a way, a declaration of our belief in our own ability to positively impact whatever it is that lies ahead. Much of the rhetoric that we have endured around these last many months have felt so far outside the norm of what we would expect in political discourse, and frequently they have felt to be in direct repudiation of the very values that we as Unitarian Universalists uphold, and indeed we cling to. Values of human dignity and worth and inclusion and equity and compassion. But these values remain our values, regardless of all the alarming and wounding words we have read and heard, regardless of the outcome of any vote. So if this sermon title feels a bit uncomfortable in today's context, and if in fact the universe seems to have been disturbed in a direction that is not what you or I believe to be right and good, then I say we must, when we are able to regather our strength, be willing to disturb it right back. Right. Ordaining a new minister, as we are here this evening, is an act of hope and a statement of our belief in our future as a faith community, as a justice movement, and as a viable and needed liberal religion in our world today. So I stand here with enormous thanks in my heart for this ritual and for that statement of faith that this represents. And it's humbling for me to be here, especially in this capacity of offering the sermon for this sacred event. Thank you, Jim, for allowing me to do this. To stand in the reflection of our long Unitarian Universalist history and ancestry as we are this evening. And it is particularly touching to be in this fellowship space. It is a singular joy for me to be among these cherished clergy, friends, honored guests, visitors, and you, the members and friends of this congregation. Many of you know that I served here as the associate minister for a handful of years. And those years were quite blessed and tender years in my life. And of course, my own ordination, which I gratefully received from this congregation, has been profoundly in my thoughts as I remember well that event and our festivities. Happily, a few years later, my good friend Karen Sandberg heard her own call to the ministry. She also grew from your ranks, and in 2012, she became the second person ordained into the Unitarian Universalist ministry by this congregation. It is a lovely thing that she continues to enjoy her fruitful chaplain's work and her mutually beneficial relationship with the fellowship as one of your community ministers. And today now, Jim makes three. Three ordinations of former congregants who have taken this monumental plunge, who have undertaken the training and the education and everything that has been asked of them, and they have returned to the fellowship and asked this board to affirm them on behalf of the congregation as being worthy of the rite of ordination. Three individuals who have been birthed not only into their ministerial vocations from among you, but also into their Unitarian Universalist faith. Because years before any of us ever knew that ministry was in our future, it was here that each one of us embraced Unitarian Universalism as our own. And we know, beyond we three, there have also been a number of congregants who have been inspired to pursue their own ministries and vocations of healing. And so it seems that one would have to include that this is very fertile faith to action ground. And as I was reflecting on what this ordination means to the fellowship and to our faith, a book came to me from a friend, as books often do. And this one is entitled Leading from Within. It's subtitled Poetry That Sustains the Courage to Lead. It holds numerous wonderful reflections on what it means to step up, to raise a hand, to say from an open heart, even and especially in the face of sorrow and fear and injustice, to say, here am I, send me. The introduction of this book is written by the uniquely gifted Quaker activist, writer, poet, teacher, Parker Palmer. One of my heroes, for sure. The book's title might lead you to believe that it is intended for those who are already in positions of leadership. But Palmer's opening words quickly address that. He in no way lets the rest of us supposed non-leaders off the hook. A foundational point in his moving introduction is that it is a misapprehension for any of us to think that some are destined for leadership and others simply are not. No, he argues, that there is actually no escaping leadership in this life. Some of us consciously and intentionally and visibly might step forward, but because we recognize, and in fact, as you use, we revere, this interdependent web of our existence for which we all are a part, we know that wherever that web of existence gets tugged, the whole web moves. And that tugging happens by the actions of each creature in it. Rosie and I were recently happy visitors to the Virgin Islands, and on one of our tours through the tropical forest there, we observed several golden orb spiders. They are big, and they are colorful, rarely harmful to humans, thank goodness. But the point that the ranger made for us is that their webs are so strong that in ancient days, if someone were walking through the forest and they happened to get cut, that they would actually use that web to bind their wound. That it's almost like very thin rope. To more visibly display her meaning, the ranger pulled at the edges of the web, with the spider quite there in the middle, and the whole thing moved, almost like a thin piece of cloth. So it is for each of us. For good or for ill, we are all tugging on this interdependent web of our existence with each action, with each conversation, with each social media post, with each gesture, with each decision we make. It is not a choice. It is not avoidable. By our existence, we are shifting the realities around us. Parker Palmer continues to make his point by saying, we are not autonomous individuals, some of whom are more alpha than others. The deep and abiding reality, the reality we have to cope with, is that we are interconnected beings, born in and for community. If this is true, and it surely is, then leadership is everyone's vocation. Everyone follows, and everyone leads. Leadership, he says, simply comes with the territory of being human. Now, because we are undoubtedly and inextricably part of this interconnected web, this community of life, we are each one engaged in leadership by every act we undertake. For some, that might be a comforting and affirming notion. For others, it might feel a bit startling, perhaps even evoke a quaking heart. Knowing this, Palmer continues, "My point is simple, though its implications are not. With every act of leadership, large and small, we help co-create the reality in which we live, from the microcosm of the personal relationship to the macrocosm of war and peace." But he knows that this is hard to take in on a gut level. It's not easy. And so, speaking in his usual self-effacing and authentic manner, Palmer refers to his own history of trying to sidestep the implications of this. He says, "When I resist thinking of myself as a leader, it is neither because of modesty or clear-eyed look at the reality of my life. It is because I have an unconscious desire to avoid responsibility, and that is just magical thinking. Of course, I am responsible for my impact on this world, whether I acknowledge it or not." "So what does it take to qualify as a leader?" he asks. "Being human and being here. As long as I am here doing whatever it is I am doing, I am leading, for better or for worse, and if I may say so, so are you." Now, his words are striking. And believing what we do, we know down deep his words are true. Ordained people may be a bit special because we have publicly and visibly accepted this mantle of leadership, but the demand to be accountable for one's daily leadership actions is something that we all, every single one of us, enjoy or are saddled with, depending on your viewpoint. Now, maybe you cringe just a bit when Palmer wrote that resisting your leadership role is neither modesty nor a clear-eyed look at the reality of your life, but instead he thought it was an unconscious desire to avoid responsibility. Now, I understand why he wrote that, and in fact, when he was writing it, he was talking about himself, his own efforts to sidestep it. I'm aware that it is not uncommon for someone to resist viewing her or himself as a leader. But to my observation, that rarely comes from outright selfishness. Far more frequently, I think, it comes from fears and feelings of inadequacy, worries that whatever it is that we, feeble and fallible beings that we are, whatever it is that we have to offer, may not be adequate for the interminable and mounting needs that surround us. You know, this may surprise some of you, but none of us is exempt from those feelings of inadequacy that prompt us to try to sidestep responsibility. Even these confident-seeming people up here, and even all those people to your right and your left that you might identify as leaders in this congregation. I do believe that the vast majority of us share those same mental demons that tell us things like, our thinking isn't analytical enough, or our words aren't eloquent enough, or our jobs aren't important enough, or our meditation practices aren't regular enough, and on it goes. As if somehow it's audacious and egotistical to acknowledge that we are each inarguably leaders in our own sphere of this interdependent web of existence. But there's nothing audacious or egotistical about it. It is simply our inescapable reality. And if we are to live our faith out into the world, and our faith calls us to do just that, then embracing this truth is certainly a prerequisite. Now, coming back to this book of poems and reflections that I mentioned earlier, Leading from Within, as I perused the pages over recent weeks, one line from a somewhat familiar poem really made me catch my breath. Actually, more honestly, I should say that the title of that poem was thoroughly familiar, but the content, not so much, until I spent some time getting reacquainted. And that poem was the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock by T.S. Eliot. Just a couple of smiles out there. Since I didn't remember it well, I dug a bit into it, and there are, of course, various interpretations and meanings ascribed to it by people who make it their business to know these things. And like all poetry, many people offer their view of what it was that Eliot was trying to say in this dialogical piece, and the story unfolds through a conversation. So many people have dissected this conversation to try to discern more clearly what exactly is the setting of it. Is the speaker in the poem just musing to himself, or is he chatting with a companion with whom he is walking, maybe to go get afternoon tea, or is it the case that we, the readers, are his intended conversation partners? In any event, the main character is a man who seems to be shy and full of self-doubt. He is verbally processing his desires to do something that will make his world different. He wonders if maybe he needs to speak up more, despite his shyness, but he worries that people won't take him seriously. He thinks maybe people will dismiss him because he's not sufficiently attractive. He fears they might laugh as they see his bald spot and just consider him as too old. He consoles himself by repeatedly wondering, perhaps faintly hoping, that there will be more time. There's more time to act, time to go back and fix mistakes. There's surely more time, right? No need to rush in, no need to speak up now, no need to take action to seize this moment now, if there's always more time. But he repeatedly turns to the question, do I dare? Do I dare? Do I dare to disturb the universe? And this is the line that has been living in my heart. By joining in the work of our faith communities, by declaring our Unitarian Universalist faith, we have all committed, knowingly or not, to overcoming those kinds of hesitations. And by claiming our values and our principles, we are all interconnected web tuggers. Sincerely living the values and principles of our faith means that we are being universe disturbers. Unitarian Universalism is and has long been a faith of heretics, questioners, protesters, and doers. In the face of prejudice, we look to join hands with the justice seekers. In the face of violence, we protect the vulnerable and we seek peace. In the face of fear, we bring love because we really do believe that love casts out fear. In the face of exclusion, we open our hearts and our doors even wider. In the face of intimidation, we publicly announce that we will hang our Black Lives Matter sign over and over and over again, as many times as it takes. By seeking ordination in the Unitarian Universalist ministry, Jim has said that he is willing to be out front as one who will disturb the universe. By claiming this faith, each one of us has said we will join him there. Let us not shy away from this. Let us not attempt to sidestep it. Let us not allow our discouragement to bury us in negativity and impotence. Let us instead dive headlong into it. Do we dare to disturb the universe? You bet your sweet bippy, we do. And in fact, we must. And so I close with the words of Maggie Kuhn. She was a very strong woman, definitely embraced her own limitations and her role as one who dared. Among several other accomplishments, Maggie was the founder of the elder advocacy group, the Gray Panthers, which she did by redirecting her rage at being forced to retire at the age of 65 because she was not ready to give up her own version of disturbing the universe. And so Maggie said this, "Leave safety behind. Put your body on the line. Stand before people you fear and speak your mind, even if your voice shakes. When you least expect it, someone may actually listen to what you have to say. Well-aimed slingshots can topple giants. We know we all have lots of work to do. We see that more clearly today than ever before. So then I say, let's join hands and get to it.